Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Raptor podcast. I'm Robert Scarpinito, your features editor.
Relige Doggett, site founder.
Andrew Stra. And if you want the rest of my last name, you can pay $3.99 for your convenience.
Oh, thank you so much. I'd like to pay. How could I pay you? PayPal? Do you take Venmo?
Yeah, PayPal, Venmo, Cash App. If you want to just like, you know, fly to Florida and like slide $20 underneath the front door. I won't let you in, but you can slide $20.
That's fair.
Now, that requires going to Florida, though.
Could I get your full
you're not allowed
Venmo...
to fast travel to Florida, though. You need to walk. flights.
There's no fairy stones.
And we can't even get your full Venmo username, right? Because we don't even know your full name. So it's...
Exactly. Difficult. No,
it's a scam.
I'm going to make it as much of a problem for you to pay me to you know, to put my name on this shtick. Like,
ironically, Capcom is not making it a problem to pay. They're making it as easy as possible. Let's just talk about it, right? Let's talk about Dragon's Dogma 2. Sequel to a game from 11 years ago that was really janky, but also had a lot of promise and heart. Dragon's Dogma 2 is out now. Our review's out on the site. But I think the bigger news that's been taking over everything and tanking the game's Steam user review score, user review rating, is the surprise microtransactions from out of nowhere on launch, right?
Well, surprise, they did release all of those plans and stuff to press, but they didn't publicly say anything.
Yeah.
And this was also what, after the producer of the game was talking about how the game doesn't need a fast travel, like, you know, some games don't need it. You'll enjoy it more if you don't fast travel, only to turn around and sell you fast traveling.
I feel like it was more antagonistic than that, wasn't it? Like, your game's fucking boring if it has fast travel. Your game is so shitty and boring if it needs fast travel. And now it's like, pay for it.
Yeah,
that's wild.
Well, I mean, not surprising though. Like, most of their recent games have had a significant amount of microtransactions. I mean, what was it that we played? Was it Resident Evil 2 earlier this year, late last year?
Four, you mean?
Four? I don't know. I don't even know what game we played. Forgettable. That, like, you could buy the coins and stuff that you got from completing the shooting challenges.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yeah.
I wasn't shocked. I guess maybe that's why a lot of press didn't cover it when we saw it. Was like, oh yeah, it's just, that's just Capcom. Like,
shitty Capcom being shitty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like this is a next step of it, right? It does feel a little worse than, because like Resident Evil is pretty arcadey, all things considered, right? Like getting coins, money.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like, you can't recreate your character. Well, you can in-game, right? There's a way to earn the item to recreate your character, or you can pay, what is it, $199, $299 for it?
Yeah, and honestly, all of them are so easy to earn in-game too. Like, you know, it's, I'm looking through the DLC right now and it's like, Explorer's Camping Kit. Cool. Play for like 3 hours, go to the checkpoint rest town, complete a super easy quest and you get a better one. And the port crystals you unlock, I think in my first playthrough, I unlocked 6. And you can't place more than 10 at a time. So you have all the set ones in the world and then you max out at being able to place 10 custom ones. So, and you carry everything over from playthrough to playthrough. So it's like, to me, it's an easy way to maybe quickly give yourself a port crystal early on in the game, because the first one you get is maybe 5 or 6 hours in. But even then, like, a huge part of the gameplay in the first, I would say, 6 to 10 hours is purely just leveling up your vocation, so that having to run from point A to point B is actually very much worthwhile, so that you can level up and get the stuff that you need to be able to go into some of the higher level areas and take on some of the dragons and larger ogres and all that kind of stuff.
I feel like it's like, because fast travel is such like a ubiquitous system in most video games, and I know that there's been a couple of times recently that we've been talking about games that has been like fast traveling versus traversal, and that stuff like in Spider-Man 2, it feels good to traverse, so you want to do it. In what was that PlayStation game with the woman who could teleport fast?
Forspoken.
Oh yeah, Forspoken.
Forspoken. In Forspoken, you guys were saying that like the open world traversal and that was fun, so you like didn't do it as much, like the fast travel as much.
Kind of. It was all right.
But to take it, like, it feels like it's getting taken away and you have to pay it. But this system reminds me a lot of what Assassin's Creed does now. Mm-hmm. With, like, you know, you can purchase a map for $5 and all of the collectibles will appear. And that doesn't, on paper, they're doing the exact same thing. But it doesn't feel like something's getting taken away. It feels like you're paying for something that normally wouldn't be in the game.
Yeah. I was going to bring up the Assassin's Creed comparison too. I feel like it's very similar. Cause I think it was either Origins or Odyssey where they literally called them time savers, right? Mm-hmm. Like in the Ubisoft store, where there was one where you could get like forever double XP. So you level up faster, which on one hand, it's like, oh, that sounds like a nice, easy way to get through the game quicker. But then also when you play the base games, it's like you need to do all of the side quests or else you will fall behind and the enemies will get stronger. So it's almost like funneling you into either you spend too much time doing side quests or just give us another $10, which feels a little malicious, you know?
Yeah, I think when it's tied to like actual leveling and stuff is when it becomes problematic. Like just looking at most of what's in here, you can earn all of it in game. I really see no point in purchasing the Wake Stones specifically. Like,
I mean,
if you're playing Dragon's Dogma, quick tip, if you run out of health and your character falls over and it's about to force you to use a Wake Stone, hit start. Eat an apple and you're good. You can completely avoid having to use the Wake Stones to respawn. I don't know how I figured that out, but it was just kind of like I've been cheesing that for 60 hours at this point.
Elite hacker here.
Yep. Makes me think about how in like Breath of the Wild, you'll be in the middle of getting your shit kicked in by a Lynel, and then you'll quickly scarf down a, you know, 3-course lobster dinner and then be like up and ready to fight again.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's pretty much what it is. Like, yeah. Get your ass rocked by an ogre. Here's an apple. Like, mm-hmm. it's ridiculous.
I mean, for experience and for leveling, as someone who like wants to play through games faster, I have definitely come to appreciate that a lot more. I've been going through a whole bunch of like retro gaming on, you know, going through like the DS catalog and stuff. And a lot of those classic like JRPGs and stuff with just like a simple x2 multiplier to experience cheat makes it such an enjoyable experience.
I believe that. I don't know. I think maybe the reason it kind of rubs a lot of people the wrong way, like from what I'm seeing, is it just feels very cynical, right? Like the way it's presented is it's very like, you don't have to play the game, just pay us to play less.
Yeah.
Which feels really just kind of against the whole point of why you would buy that. Like if you're someone who bought Dragon's Dogma at $70, $69.99 retail with tax on launch, you're probably really excited for it. Right? Like you are like in, you're an early adopter. So why would you pay more to like get less time in the game, right? Like theoretically.
Yeah, I mean the only thing in this list that will help you proceed faster is the Rift crystals that you can purchase, because even early on in the game, if you want, you can change the pawn kind of search to be much higher level pawns, but they cost more. So, it, you know, if you start the game with 1500 Rift Crystals or whatever, you could, in theory, immediately hire to 20 to 25, level 20 to 25 pawns.
Right.
So that's really the only one to me that's kind of like sort of skipping cheating of a sort.
And I get the idea
a stretch.
I can get the idea of, you know, it seems cynical if you're paying money to play less of the game, but I think it also depends what the quality of what you're doing in that moment is. Because, like, I could say, you know, I played, you know, 5 hours of Final Fantasy III this weekend, and it was me, you know, running circles in a dungeon grinding up because my job level was incorrect, and that's you know, that's 4 hours in game, but it's like wasted time. It's low quality time.
Right.
That if, you know, if over the course of your adventure, because you have those extra teleport stones early, if that saves, like, you know, even over the entire course of the game, if that saves an hour, I mean, and this is where we get to like the time versus money. How much do you value your time? How much, where are you in your life and your situations that you put a value on your own time versus putting extra money into a game? But like, if I pay $2 to mean that I have regained 2 hours worth of quality time as opposed to slow time, then then that could be valuable to people.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest thing that rubs me wrong about it is how they did not talk about it at all until it was there. That's the disingenuous part, and that seems especially, you know, that they had the pre-talk about how fast travel isn't a requirement. It comes off as underhanded. It wasn't just, oh, we didn't talk about the microtransactions because we thought that no one would care about the microtransactions. This is, we didn't talk about the microtransactions because we knew people would be pissed off. Mm-hmm. kind of vibes. They hit it.
Yeah, which I find really interesting, because when I think about other Capcom games, because yes, like, right, you're right, Resident Evil had them, Monster Hunter, the recent Monster Hunters had a ton of like pay to win, but, you know, just pay to like get all this extra stuff. Mm-hmm. And Devil May Cry 5, if I remember right, also had, like, because you can get red orbs in the game, that's like your currency, or you can pay real world money to get a ton more to unlock your skills faster. But I don't really remember a huge, but like, they never hit negative reviews on Steam because of it. You know what I mean? Like, this mm-hmm. one feels very like a flashpoint.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about Resident Evil 4, like, I would consider some of those worse. Like, being able to purchase the coins, for example, like, that's a fast track to an achievement. And there were mm-hmm. a couple others that were essentially tied to achievements that you could kind of shortcut your way to them. And I thought that was weird. Like, at least in this case, none of these are tied to specific achievements. They're just kind of like, hey, if you want something a little better to start, go nuts.
Yeah.
One port crystal, really not gonna shake up the meta too much, because you place it one place. If you decide you want to pick it up and reuse it, you've got to blow another fairy stone, and that's not really worth it. Now, there is already a mod out that has a vendor that you can buy 999 fairy stones from if you want to, for one gold each. But, you know, I think that's funny. I think that's totally fine. Like, mm-hmm. either way, like, if you want a shortcut and be able to get around the world faster, like, whatever, man. Like, I think you're going to miss out on a lot, though.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the exploration of Dragon's Dogma, you just run into weird shit, man. Like, I'm on my second playthrough. I didn't beat it the first time. Let me be clear with that. I spent about 60 hours.
Can I ask, is it because you couldn't beat it, or like, you just wanted to start over?
I was playing on a company account, and now I'm playing on my personal.
Okay, so you literally legally couldn't beat it.
I mean, I could. I've spent the last couple weeks like just exploring and mm-hmm. spending a ton of time specifically on the Sphinx riddles. That one of them is so well hidden. I never would have thought of it. But when somebody else figured it out, it was like, holy shit, that's kind of a brilliant riddle. So most of what I was doing was just exploring and trying to figure out like, what all could you do? What are the weird things that you can find around the world? And just running into some interesting side quests and stuff that Aaron and Isaac also dumped a significant amount of time in, and they didn't even bump into those. So like, they had some side quests I didn't find, and vice versa. Even going to the same areas, like, we didn't bump into the same stuff at the same time or in the same order. And even my second playthrough is completely different. So the exploration, I think, is honestly probably the best part of the game. I spent 20 minutes earlier trying to figure out how to fling one of my pawns up to a chest so they would open it for me. Failed miserably. Apparently there's another way to get to that chest, but like, there's just these things that you're like, it's right fucking there and I can't get to it. And then you spend 20 to 30 minutes figuring out how to get to that chest.
Right.
So it's cool.
Yeah. And you'd miss out on that if you were just like, I'm going to buy a bunch of warp crystals.
Yeah. Or if you just go straight to your objective, like it very much rewards you going off the beaten path because you're going to find extra resources for upgrading. You're going to find kind of slightly higher tier weaponry than you would have if you didn't explore.
Is it a bit like Skyrim, like the idea of just like explore the world, do everything but the main story kind of vibes?
Yeah, like the main story itself is super short. I would say if you just mainline story, which is going to be super difficult if you don't do a lot of kind of side quest stuff, 15, 20 hours maybe. True ending is tied behind mainlining that quest. So what Isaac figured out was that in order to get the true ending, you have to beat the game, new game plus, and then you have to beat the main story within 7 days, in-game days.
Oh.
That's kind of cool. Is,
yeah, and through that, once you, and I could be wrong on this, once you new game plus, there's a new vendor you can go to trade worm crystals, which are dropped from beating dragons on like super high tier weaponry. So like there's kind of a progression system within the game tied to new game plus, because you carry everything over except for your food, which all goes rotten. Like typically when you put an apple in storage, it doesn't go rotten no matter how long you leave it in, but new game plus actually makes that food go rotten.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, which I think is a good way to handle it. Like, no, you can't carry 200 apples to your next playthrough.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm excited to, like, actually finish the story. I did some big chunks, and there's just all these little things that you keep running into that you're like, you know what, that's kind of fucking cool. Mm-hmm. And the game really rewards exploration in a big way. Like, yeah. I was not looking for the Sphinx. I was just wandering around and found it. And it is way off the beaten path. So, yeah.
It sounds like it's the kind of game that just has a lot to dig into, right? Like, if you want to lose yourself in it, you can. And it just makes me think about, I think, kind of like zooming out of it, just in general, the community in the games industry can be very quick to outrage and anger. I know that's a hot take. I know no one would ever say that about this industry.
Gamers angry? No.
But I think like that, because when you brought up the like Resident Evil and all these other Capcom games that had it, it's like I'm a fan of Capcom games in general, but like Street Fighter is egregious with microtransactions too. But I don't get angry or upset about it. I'm like, oh well, that sucks. Anyway, I'm gonna keep playing Resident Evil. I'm just gonna keep playing Devil May Cry. I'm just gonna keep enjoying the video game that was released and not worry about the DLC, because that's the thing. It's like, even if it's out there, no one's forcing you to buy it, right? It's shitty that it's there, but it's also like you can just ignore it, you know?
Yeah, well, when we were talking about this like right before the podcast, like, so we got Light Your Frontier ahead of launch, and I played a bunch of it, and I just bought the DLC earlier. I was like, oh, there's DLC out now, let me support the game. I do that for a lot of games, where if I've dumped, even if it's like a $60 game and I've dumped 200 hours in, if there's like a small little DLC, that to me, that's like another way to support the developer. You know, I don't think I'd do it for Dragon's Dogma. I might, I don't know, but in a lot of cases, like, I use DLC as a way to show further support for the game,
like a tip jar.
Unless it's like egregious, obviously I'm not gonna do that, but Founders Pack, stuff like that, like if I'm really vibing with a game, I will willingly buy the DLC just as a, like, hey, I really enjoyed my time. Same thing with battle passes. Even if I don't think I'm going to finish it, if I'm having a great time with the game, I'll buy it.
Yeah. But I think it's just about value, right? Like, what do you get back as a consumer, right? But I don't know. I think it's, and I know part of the like the Steam reviews is also the PC performance. I know that's playing a part of it too for Dragon's Dogma. The like issues. No issues. Are you on a NASA supercomputer?
In my 60 hours, I've had stuttering once.
Yeah, but you're also running like the literal top of the line system you could run. Aren't you on like Aaron a 4080? Has
almost or identical a 4090? Hardware to me. So she's on a 3080, I'm on a 3070.
Okay. Both
AMD Ryzen, M2. So I don't know why. It and was she interesting. Had
issues?
She had tons of issues. She had to limit frame rate at one point just to be able to play. Because I will admit, one time that I had issues, it was raining. And the game just did not know how to handle rain. But then I went, I was like, F this. I camped, and it went away. And I never had it again. I'm trying to find the Capcom reasoning.
It was that the generation of NPCs is very CPU intensive. So as you move into
basically into they said
NPC heavy places.
It says in Dragon's Dogma 2, a large amount of CPU usage is allocated to each character and dynamically calculates the impact of their physical presence in various environments. In certain situations where numerous characters appear simultaneously, the CPU usage can be very high and affect the frame rate.
Yeah.
And we're aware in such situations, settings that reduce GPU load may currently have a limited effect. We're looking into ways to improve performance in the future. So, I mean, they knew it was a problem pre-launch, which is unfortunate. I think that, again, like for me, it's been pretty flawless. I'm running on whatever the highest settings are and having no issues.
Yeah. It's weird that it's different by... like not you can't even really troubleshoot it by like the strength of your PC. It's like I truly feel like, just weird hardware things.
I feel like, and I can't say this is for certain, but I feel like every time there's been graphical issues, it's mainly been the 4080 or the 3080. The 3070 and the 4070's been fine. And I don't understand that. Like I think Aaron's had similar issues on other games I've played too. We're on essentially the same card, but with slightly more video RAM. And I find that very strange, but it's also not surprising. Developing for different hardware is such a pain.
Oh yeah.
I can't even imagine.
There was a thread on our Dragon's Dogma that I found a few days ago that, a Reddit user, Cap'n Fappin, was saying that he wanted to start a discussion with people and get a list going of all of the inconsequential NPCs so that you could know, like, going into an area who you can kill to just... You know, if the issue is that too many NPCs are causing the CPU to drop, okay, which CPUs are going?
Yep.
Yeah, that's some troubleshooting if I've ever seen it. That's like some speedrun strats.
Yeah, yeah. People are throwing like random pawns and NPCs just off of cliffs and stuff too, I think. Which is just, it's like, you know what? I need better GPU.
Yeah.
Which is just really funny to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like which armor set has the least polygons on it to save a few frames.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny too,
environmental
like,
impact.
If you kill certain NPCs, you can res them. And like there's an area in the later part of the game where you're basically clearing out a bandit stronghold, but the first two people you have to fight have names. And so I killed one, rezzed him. He tried to attack me again, killed him again. And so you can like technically just get in this cycle of just res kill and XP farm. But I thought that was really funny that like, hey, let me save you, bro. And then he's like, fuck you, I'm coming after you again. Like
that sounds like some like Minecraft mob farmer, like force NPCs to spawn super high in the air. They drop, they die. You get experience and then just like lather, rinse, repeat.
Yeah. I mean, like, even all of these like issues aside, I'm really glad that Dragon's Dogma 2 is like hitting really well and that people are really enjoying it, because it's definitely on my list of games to check out once I finish Rebirth. Because like I've been seeing so many weird and interesting gifs of things you can do, like one of like a giant ogre or troll like kind of falling and then being like a bridge between a gap.
Destroyed the bridge too, so yeah. Like bridges can get destroyed, and so the fact that like it, I guess it like swiped and destroyed the bridge and then tripped, and then the players were just like, all right, you're my bridge now.
Yeah And so I thought that's funny. Cool. That's yeah. Some like Zelda Breath of the Wild kind of shit that I'm into, you know?
Yeah There's a lot of those kind of like weird interactions that I think are funny. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes there's the really shitty ones where you're like fighting a dragon and then a griffin's like, yo, what's up? And then you're like, there's no way I win this fight.
Yeah. Can I ask, I think either there's multiple classes, if I remember, or vocations or whatever they're called. Have you found it easy? Like you started with one, but you're like, oh, I don't like this, I'm going to do another.
You need to pick your vocation carefully, I will say. So there's 8 classes, each of which kind of has its own strengths and weaknesses. The only things you can carry over from class to class are your augmentations. Archer has like you have more stamina, fighter has you have more strength or more HP, warrior is more strength. And some of the other classes are interesting. And then there's one called Warfarer, which is basically just, I'm literally every class.
Oh.
Which is kind of cool. But when you level up, so you have your vocation level and then you have your level up level. When you level up, your stats go up based on what class you have. Mm. So like you would not want to run 50 levels as a warrior and then switch to one of the magic classes.
Right.
You'd be at a disadvantage in terms of kind of your stats, and same thing with your pawn. But you can like right out the gate switch vocation like literally 30 minutes in. So if you're starting that early area and you're like, you know what, I'm not really a fan of this vocation, you can quickly switch. I think it's once you get past level 40-50 that you kind of start to get punished a little. Right. Because of how important certain, you know, obviously you don't want a low HP warrior or something, or like, you know, I'm a very strong and magic warrior.
Yeah.
Now there like are some classes mage. That are dual though. Like there's like Mystic Archer, Magic Archer, which is like part mage, part archer. There's, I don't remember what the other one's called, but it's like part warrior, part mage. Oh. So like there are some of the later ones that are worthwhile. The first 4 are very much like these are the skills you're getting. And even weapon upgrades are kind of the same way. Like elves, dwarves, humans, and whatever the cat people are, I can't remember their name right now. That's Skyrim. Each of their upgrades have different stats. So like you can, for example, if you're a warrior, you go to Batal and you basically get a ton of strength with each upgrade. But like the elves are a little more focused on like stamina and things like that, and so on right. and so forth. So
okay, so it's like pretty meaty, and like if you want to experiment with the classes, you should probably do it ASAP, like early, so yeah. That way you
or even just for like one level.
Yeah.
And say like, let me see how I feel about the archer, or how I feel about some of the other classes.
Yeah,
but it's fun. Like the abilities are fun. Like fighter and warrior, for example, I like that I can just yeet my companions up onto a large enemy mid fight. Like yo, go stab him in the eye. And it's just there's a couple that are like you throw them up in the air and everything takes damage when it falls. Shield bashing goblins off of cliffs, it's great.
Just imagining like 2 hardened warriors in medieval times and one of them going like uppies, like yeah. I want uppies.
Wait, hold on, could you have a because you can have four total, like you, your pawn you make, and then two pawns, right?
Yes.
Okay. Can you get four swole warriors and do three uppies, like a tower of uppies?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, okay. You can. Beautiful. And it's funny too, because the pawns, like, at one point I had like all female pawns, and they were making comments like, it's kind of weird that we're all women and stuff like that. And I thought,
that's actually fucking cool.
Yeah. And then like, there was another one that was like, you know, one of my former masters had nothing but women companions. And I thought that was strange. And like, you know, hey, we all have different vocations. And somebody's like, well, that makes us very well-rounded. Like just the chatter that's from fun. The pawns is actually really good.
Yeah, I'm glad compared that there's like that level of reactivity.
Compared to Guardians of the Galaxy, where's the Bants? Better or worse?
I would say it's minimal on the Bants for the most part. It's mostly just like one of the benefits of the pawn systems is that pawns learn. So they'll remember where chests were with you or with someone else. And when you pass that area, they're like, hey, I know where a chest is. Okay. And you basically just hit the go command and then you follow them.
That's cool.
Yeah, and then they have quest knowledge around like main quests, side quests, stuff like that, and they'll help guide you if it's one that doesn't have a lot of clues. And like the one that we figured out the other day was there's like a woodland tongue or something is a specialization you can give a pawn. If you go to the Elvish area, you don't understand what any of those motherfuckers are saying. It's all in Elvish. So you literally to have a pawn that has that specialization to understand what they're saying.
That's cool.
That's cool. That's that's rad.
It's just, there's all these little things that as you bump into each one, you're like, that's so cool. Like it seems very small, but when you bump into it, you're like, that's freaking cool.
You know, this is giving me some like that level of like when I played Baldur's Gate 3, there were a lot of moments where I was like, that's cool that the devs thought of that. Is that kind of what you're getting from
a
here?
A little bit,
kind of
yeah. The vibe I'm like, getting. You know, like just going off the beaten path and finding stuff is cool. Like there's definitely some choices you can make within the game. Like early on in the first couple hours, there's somebody who starts following you. And you chase that motherfucker down, you tackle him to the ground. You have a chance to either let him go or eat him. And if you let them go, you can also basically just be like, give me money. But or you can obviously get rid of them, and then whatever that person knows doesn't get back to the big bad. So like you can kind of pick and choose, and there's been a number of quests that kind of had options, and there's a couple that are time limited. So like, hey, you need to go save this person. If you don't do it fast enough, they did. And you can't res them. So
man, you're making me want to buy this. I told myself I'd finish Final Fantasy before I do, but damn.
Yeah, it's like going from Rebirth to this for me, from as someone who just explores every nook and cranny, it's great. I'm two back-to-back absolute fucking bangers. I know that a lot of people, you know, had issues with their performance and had issues with some kind of maybe the slowness of it for the most part, but I think if you're someone who likes to explore like kind of complex systems and choice, it's such a good game. Like this is very much going to be one of those I'm 100% achieving this despite the fact that it's going to take me like a long time. I think like there's just this hidden stuff. There's an achievement to, I think it's petrify a Medusa, which how the fuck do you petrify a Medusa until you find a shield that literally reflects stuff back? So like she tries to petrify you and you just put the shield up and boom.
Nice.
So
hell yeah.
It's just these things that you'll just bump into and you're like, I don't know what this is for. And then you bump into what it's for.
Yeah, that gives me like a similar vibe too of like I think with Elden Ring, I don't think you two played a lot of it, right? But Elden Ring has that kind of thing where it's like there's some weapons that are really, really niche, but then like when you realize what they could be used for, you're like, oh, it's cool that you could do it for that. Or there's just that level of you want to discover things just for the sake of discovering it. Like you see a weapon description, you're like, I don't use, like, I'm a warrior. I don't use like dexterity weapons, but I want to use this just to see what it looks like. Yeah. And I'm getting that sense too from Dragon's Dogma. That it's like, just, you want to do things for the sake of yourself and curiosity. And I'm really here for that.
Oh yeah. There's so much to explore in that world too. Like, one of the nice things I will say about like the map is not monstrously big for the most part. It is very large, but in a lot of games you have that fog of war and you have really no idea where you're going. Very lightly in the background of the map you can see the paths outlined, even kind of in the regions you haven't been, so you can kind of be like, okay, this is how I get there. I see kind of an offshoot up ahead, I should go check that out,
right?
Rather than like having to come back and wander around, it's kind of like, oh, there's, I see very top of the map, there's somewhere I haven't actually been yet, let me go look. And then you come across a freaking dragon, and that kind of stuff is just cool.
Yeah, that sounds rad.
Yeah, it's pretty dope. Like, I really enjoyed the original. I thought that the pawn system was really cool. They really didn't change a ton with the pawn system for the most part, but it remains probably why the game is as good as it is being able to just like randomly swap out pawns. And even like one of the benefits of the pawn system is the fact that you can basically assign them a quest. And if they go out with somebody, they accomplish that quest and you give that person a reward for helping them.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
So if, like, for example, you can send them out and their pawn quest is defeat a Cyclops. If a pawn defeats a Cyclops, whether it's with you or with other players X number of times, they become better at taking down Cyclopses.
Ah, that's cool.
So it's kind of just another system on top of another system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's also, it's so good when a game has a system that like it nails and it does well. That's the kind of thing, it's like, you don't really need to iterate. Like, just, you know, there's always, you know, modern conveniences and more you can do just when a game, you know, when a sequel for a game comes out a decade later. But that's also really good to hear that, like, that was a thing that they were like, well, we nailed it. We're secure enough to know, let's just release it again.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think there's a significant amount that's wildly different from a mechanical perspective. It's just, I think it took what were already solid systems and refined them further.
And it's a unique system too, you know, like the Nemesis system. There's really nothing else like that in the Lord of the Rings games.
Yeah, it adds kind of just a different layer to a genre that is so widely used.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Stretch, you have watched Halo TV.
I watched Halo Season 2.
Well, I have one question to start.
Yeah.
Do they fuck again?
No. They do not.
So they took the most egregious thing and didn't do it again.
Yeah. Spoilers
for Halo Season 1.
Which, like, technically we're going to spoil Season 2 now. So.
Yeah, that's awesome.
No, like, I'm going full bore into spoilers at this point.
Full sound.
If you've watched it, you've watched it. If you haven't watched it, you haven't watched it. This season, I realized what it was that kept me coming back to this show. It's because I enjoy the Halo lore so much. And at the time that they get to ruining one plot point, they have already begun to set up the next interesting plot point. So it was kind of every time I would get like drawn into something, they would kind of muck it up, but something else would immediately be like, oh, but that's kind of interesting. Like, let's check that out. So like, it starts with, you know, with Master Chief on Reach, you know, for the fall of Reach, which is an incredible Halo book. If there's like one Halo book that you have time to read, read Fall of Reach, because it's just fucking awesome. But they, you know, they kind of go into this with like, oh, Covenant are learning how to jam signals. Like, it's going to be the fall of Reach. This is going to be a huge thing. And then, the bad guy who's part of the military is like, well, we know that the aliens are coming, so we've got to evacuate with, you know, all of our expensive shit that includes the armor. So like Fall of Reach happens. Armor? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the Fall of Reach happens. We only get to see like it from the perspective of one city, which is fine, but they have taken away Master Chief's armor. And then they kill a member of Silver Team. And it's like really set up, really cool. And then it's just like, well, what? and you know, Chief gets away. But here's where it got really weird at the end of the season. They're finally like, we're going to get to the Halo ring. That's right. The show Halo only sets foot on the Halo ring in the final episode. But you want to know what's crazy that's going on at the same time that they are only just about to set foot on the Halo ring? They find the Flood underneath an Oni base. So the Flood, which are meant to be, like, the reason that the Flood was captured was because of the Forerunners in the Halo ring that you let out. But now they're just like, oh no, the Flood
there before were on you even go to the ring.
A planet, yeah.
Huh.
Man, I feel like I have not read the Silmarillion right now. I'm just...
Well, because like that's the big turning point in the middle of the first Halo game when it goes from being a sci-fi shooter to almost like a sci-fi horror shooter. As the Flood begin to
that shit terrified me as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was scary as fuck. Especially like when you're in that first room and there's just like comms chatter about like what are these things, and then just screaming, and then the lights go out and everything goes into like panic flashes. But the Flood isn't on the Halo ring. The Halo ring that was designed to kill the food source of the Flood, to keep it contained within like the bio vaults, and they're not there. it makes no sense. It's so baffling. But also, the Flood are fucking awesome. They did them so well.
That's good.
So this is the quintessential. They mucked it up, but also you're interested.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think of like another analog for like, you know, the reason the Flood are on the Halo is extremely specific. It's tied into the not only the narrative beats, but like the greater lore of the purpose of the Halo. So if that's not where they're keeping the, you know, the few samples of Flood that they have, then it's like, what? I mean, because isn't that even the reason that the Covenant is making it to the Halo? Because of, you know, the great evil that they have, like, hidden underneath?
I think it's very tied in, like, their religion. I'm blanking on, like, what their reasons were.
Yeah,
I don't know if it was the Flood or if it was, like,
just the Halo
Holy Crusade
itself.
Type stuff. Yeah. I think it was a little more Holy Crusade for the most part, but I honestly can't remember now.
Yeah. And then like Chief and Cortana get one scene together this whole season.
Isn't that like 80% of why people like Halo?
Yeah. They're doing a whole lot to humanize Chief and the other Spartans. Like it was a big plot point in season one that they like cut out this thing that is meant to be like an emotional suppressor in them. But kind of a lot of the heart of Halo is that Chief, who is a human, is a soulless robot, and then he learns to become softer because of this AI robot that is more human than he is. But when you don't like have that dichotomy, it's like, well, it's not really Halo. Like, it's a fine sci-fi. It's just
a sci-fi drama at that point.
Yeah, it's just so not Halo with the Halo skin on it, but also the Flood look great. So I'm looking forward to season three, but I know it's really weird. But yeah, it's like, oh, we're doing Fall of Reach. I'm excited. Oh, that kind of sucked. But they've set this other thing up, and I'm looking forward to that. Oh, that kind of sucked. But this other thing has been set up. But that, like, it's just...
So you're explaining my experience with the Transformers movies.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean...
You're like, oh, yeah, that was kind of eh. I'm ready for the next one. Like,
yeah. They had some awesome fights. They did a great battle between the Arbiter and Chief at the end. Not as many grunts as I was hoping. I think that we really need to get a good, like, grunt beatdown scene. Yeah. Like, watching Master Chief walk into a room of sleeping grunts and then just, like, pull out his pistol backwards. but it's just, it's fucking weird. And I just can't get over the Flood not being on Halo.
That's so weird. Odd. And, like, hopefully we'll get some good, like, Chief Arbiter time, too, because that was, like, super crucial to kind of the overall plot, too, was them becoming chummy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I totally get that, because you see that a lot in movie and TV adaptations of things where they want to change parts of the narrative or parts of the world to make their thing more unique, like their take on the universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to me, this is sounding like they're changing things that feel so integral to what makes Halo Halo, like especially the Master Chief to Cortana drama. Like that, I like, even as someone who my first and only Halo game I've really played was Infinite, like I knew from the outside that, yeah, that's that drama of a computer teaches man to love is like the core of the dramatic moments and beats of Halo. And to remove that, it's like you need to replace it with something. Because if a TV show does not have the dramatic beat that everyone was there for, what are people here for? Right?
Yeah. I mean, I think a big part of it is there's no way any of this is canon at this point. Like, oh, I feel like it's not even remotely there. I think they were like, we don't want to just retell the same story, but also maybe didn't fully understand kind of the intent behind some of the key parts of the story around Master Chief going from essentially like just monotone robot game one to what happens in Infinite. Towards the end there is pretty kind of emotional.
Yeah. It would be like they released the Last of Us TV show, but Joel and Ellie never spent time together. It's just like
they just bumped into each other at like, you know, some random outpost. Yeah. And then
it'd be like if Joel didn't lose his daughter in the beginning, like then it's like, okay, you're changing a core point of this character and his motivations and why you want to root for him or maybe don't root for him depending on the things he does, right?
Hess doesn't die.
Yeah, it's just so weird to change those core things that, or like even not replace them with something equal, something that is fitting for that character and what people want from that character, right?
Yeah. I've watched the first few episodes and I do like I am a fan of kind of the cheekiness of Silver Team.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you're a fan of cheeks.
I think that that's kind of a nice thing to have, and it's interesting to see the personality from each of them and kind of the jokes about, you know, Vanek not being able to crack a good joke or whatever it is that they're kind of, you know, chirping about. But the rest of it, I just have such a hard time with. As someone who is way too many hours in Halo, loves the lore, all that kind of stuff, a lot of it to me is just kind of baffling. I wouldn't say it's bad TV. I think it's just for those of us that are very familiar with Chief and Cortana and a lot of the characters within, to us it's a baffling decision.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if you gave this to someone who had never played Halo, it would make a lot of sense to them. To me, it just doesn't make sense, but I still want to watch it.
Yeah. I feel like you hear that criticism a lot though with a lot of adaptations, right? Like if this weren't that universe TV show. It'd be a decent show.
Yeah. Because right? The production value is phenomenal. I'll give it that. Like, I think that a lot of the locales we see in the armor and a lot of the CGI is very well done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, compared to a lot of things that may have poor CGI or they definitely seem to use a lot of practical effects, which I think is very beneficial to a sci-fi series. But I personally just find it hard to detach myself from what I know.
Right.
And I think that's where a lot of the frustration from the Halo community comes, is like, yo, guys, this just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I definitely, like, if you just wanted the story of the first game, you could go and play the first game. Like, that is so available. You can experience that on any mobile device or a Samsung TV. Like, yeah. That is so insanely accessible.
Mm-hmm.
But you still want the blueprint to be there. And when there's so much lore, so much extended universe around Halo, what they're doing is just fucking weird. It's just, at its core, it's just weird.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's where a lot of the season three. Where a lot of like Star Wars and those properties go right as they do try and, you know, Marvel too, they stick very close to that source material as much as they can while telling a new story. And there's no issue with new stories. I think that it's just, I think the story is interesting in the way it's told. There's just kind of those high impact moments that we're not getting. It feels very slow in comparison to kind of Halo's stupidly fast paced action in the games and books and a lot of the other materials. I mean, like even Forward Unto Dawn. If you're so a Halo slow. Fan, yeah, it felt very slow, and maybe that's just part of it. Is like it's hard to replicate that same feeling,
right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the tough thing with adaptations, right? It's like it's good to have new takes and new stories, but also if a version of it exists and there's like a really hype moment or a really beloved character plot point. And if you're going to change those, the replacement needs to be worth it, right? Like, otherwise, why don't I just play the original game instead? Why don't I just read the original books or whatever, right?
Yep.
But we're now on the Halo. Season 2 was definitely much better than Season 1, especially in, like, pacing and stuff. Still slow pacing, but it was way better. So it looks like they're dialing in and they're figuring out what's what there. So...
Maybe they just need two whole seasons to ramp up. Some shows need 3 to 6 episodes, and they need two seasons.
It gets really good 16 hours in. I swear, it gets really good 16 hours in.
Yeah, Starfield really paved the way for that. You know, it needs 12 hours to get good, needs 16 hours to get good.
I mean, at this point, we could just probably hope for a video game adaptation of the TV show to be the new Halo game. Let's reboot it.
Yeah, let's start over.
It's just going to be a 4X strategy game.
Like, Halo Wars 3, is that what you want?
Yeah.
That's just crazy that we have, I mean, we've got Halo Infinite, but we have absolutely nothing about what the future of Halo looks like. And it hasn't been the brightest in recent years. So,
well, wasn't Infinite supposed to be like a platform for them to build upon for years to come?
Yeah, and they just missed the mark. I'm going to say technically. I think that I really enjoyed the Halo Infinite campaign. I saw no issues with the campaign. I think what Halo is known for and what keeps it running as long as it does is the multiplayer. And the multiplayer was frustrating primarily because of hit registration and a couple other things that they took until basically now to fix. You know, they rolled out high-tech servers, I want to say last week, and the community is very happy. Like, hey, hit registration feels better. Movement feels better. But it took them, how many years has it been? 2.5 years to get to that point where the community is like, hey, multiplayer feels really good.
Wait, has it really been 2.5? Was it 2021? It was holidays.
Yeah. It was December 2021.
Yeah, wow.
So for it to have been that launching off platform that everyone wanted, I think they waited too long to fix the issues that the community felt were a problem and spent more time on issues that were less of a problem, like whatever the new jumping you can do is, the jump slide, where if you hit a downward slope. There's somebody on Twitter and Twitch called Shyway that does tutorials on like how to jump glide and stuff across maps, to where if you hit an edge just right and crouch, you pick up a speed boost. And so a lot of their early efforts were focused around like toning that back, while the community is like, no, this is freaking cool. It makes kind of the movement and traversal and speed of the game really interesting. Mm. And it also adds another kind of skill level to where you've got to be good at shooting, but you've also got to be good at the movement.
Yeah.
And they spend a lot of time on that rather than maybe fixing some of the hit registration issues that myself and other players are like, this is frustrating.
And you got to think as well that that December 2021 was after they delayed it for a year at the last moment. So it's just crazy.
And it's a shame because like you've also seen a lot of high profile people within 343 leave at this point. Mm-hmm. Game directors, Bonnie left, I think, early on.
Well, a lot of people.
Hey, we've got
like in that we've delay got Marathon. Too. Yeah. Well. Yeah, that's like isn't it Bungie though?
It's Bungie.
I was like, wait a minute, different developer.
Yeah, but that's like an extraction shooter, right? For a Marathon.
I don't know what it's going to be yet.
The new one. They just released the old one, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I need to get my hands on again.
Yeah.
Back in the day, pre-Halo. Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a good place for us to wrap for this week's episode. We hope you enjoyed. And if you did, let us know in the comments down below what your thoughts were on the Halo TV show, Halo Season 2.
Did you even watch it?
Did you even watch it? Honestly, if you haven't, just say you did. We won't tell. We won't fact check that part. Or if you're playing Dragon's Dogma 2, we're really curious how you're feeling about the game and the exploration. If you've stumbled upon any weird interesting stuff, or if our guides have helped you find weird interesting stuff, you can let us know in the comments down below. Otherwise, we'll be back next week on Wednesday to be in your feed. And if you want more stuff from us, we're at techraptor.net, news, reviews, features all week long, etc. But we'll see you next week. Bye bye.